Masechta Tainis Daf Chof Amud Aleph Tosis de Ramaschal Nikdara. The Gemara in Ar Amud tells the story of Nachdim and Ben Gurion, who, in order to provide badly needed water for the Oli Regalim, those who were visiting the Mikdash on the Regel, had borrowed an enormous amount of water from one of the Roman noblemen, and promised that if he wouldn't pay it back by a certain time, that he would give an enormous sum of money. And on the day he was supposed to return the money, so he davened and it miraculously rained. But the Roman nobleman said that it was too late because it rained after sunset. And Nachdim and Ben-Gurion davened again and the clouds dissipated and indeed the sun shone. And the Gemara describes that really this was a miracle, that it already was supposed to be sunset, but the sun miraculously either returned to the sky or stayed still. Similar to the miracle in the days of Yoshua and in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, which the Gemara records a little later. So in that context, the Gemara used the term Nikdara Chama, both in terms of the conversation between this Roman nobleman and Nakdimon, that Ilo Nikdara Chama Hayali Pischon Pe'alecha. That if not for the fact that the sun was Nikdara, we'll see the exact meaning in a moment, so I would have been able to say that you owe me the money because it came too late. Then the Gemara says that the very name Nakdimon is really a nickname. His real name was Buni, and he's called Nakdimon. And at least in our version of the Gemara, we have Shenikdara Chama Bavuro. Not exactly the same as Nakdimon. And there's another Girsa Nikdama, which is similar to Nakdimon, but we actually have the Girsa Nikdara, and therefore it's not a precise parallel to his nickname. Then finally, the Gemara records the Braisa that there were three people that Nikdama Lahem Chama Bavuran, Moshe, Yoshua, and Nakdimon Ben Gurion. And there again, there's a Girsa that some have Nikdara. So Tosis has the word Nikdara, which is either going on the first two times, or perhaps all three times, where the Gemara says Nikdara, and he wants to comment as to what the etymology of that word is. So Tosis comments, Kemo Mikader Beharim, in Erevin Nun Chesem Aleph, referring to the fact that the Tchum Shabbos is measured not by the way actually people walk, which would include mountains and valleys, but a straight line. And the Gemara describes through a certain more complex measuring process as to how to measure a straight line through the mountain. And in that context speaks about Mikader Beharim, that literally you penetrate the mountains, but that's not what's literally done in measuring it, but you do a measurement that conceptually penetrates the mountains and doesn't count the greater distance over the mountain. So hence the Tchum Shabbos could actually be a bigger walking distance. Because even though, let's say, over the mountain, it might be more than a tchum, but through the mountain, it would be under the tchum, and therefore would be permitted to walk. So Tosis further elaborates, Kolomar Shemenake Varakia, meaning in this context that the sun literally penetrates the sky or the atmosphere. So on the art scroll, they suggest that penetrated the clouds, but it could be that Tosis is not driving at that, because there's another Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, where it talks about non-Jews making a sukkah at the end of days, and then Hashem makes it very hot, and there it also uses the term that Hashem is Makdir Aleihem Chama Kitkufas Tamuz, that He shone the sun on them as if it were the summer. Of course, sukkah takes place in the fall, but it was so hot from the sun as if it were in the summer. And there's no indication that it was cloudy. So it could be that here, even though here it was cloudy and the sun did shine through the clouds because the clouds dissipated, but that the term Nikdara here is referring to penetrating the sky or the atmosphere in the sense of shining through the air of the sky. Rashi explains similarly to Tosis. He starts off by explaining the word Nikdara as Zarcha, to shine. Again, Lashon Makdir, and Rashi in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah also quotes the Gemara in Erev and the Tosis references here. Doesn't quite, in his translation, speak about Menakev, but in the French word that he uses, Pirtutzar, probably mispronouncing it, but they explain that that actually means to puncture. So Rashi is also explaining, as Tosis does, that the term Nikdara is related to the idea of puncturing or penetrating. The other Gersos that we have in the Gemara, especially in the last instantiation where it speaks about Moshe, Yeshua, and Nakdimon, where we have Nikdama, and some had it a little earlier when it describes the very name Nakdimon comes from Nikdama, So that's somewhat mysterious what that word means, but Tosfos seems not to have that girsa. But if you would have that girsa, so I've seen it translated either as nikdama in the sense of kodem, that the sun stayed still and it was where it was later, the same place where it was before. And others seems to translate it as nikdama from the language of kedem, that it stayed more eastward, meaning it didn't totally set in the west. But again, Tosfos is not explaining that, so that's not our topic for now. Tosdi v'maskel gzirifti. The Gemara in a series of drushes points out that certain klalos, seeming curses that appear in the various tochachot of the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim, are really lebracha. So one of them is a pasuk in Malachi, where the full pasuk reads, V'gam ani nasati eschem nivzim ushfalim l'chol ha'om, kefi asher inchem shamrim et drachai v'nosim panim b'torah. Again, on a pshat level, Malachi is rebuking the nation and saying that in exile, the Jews are going to be lowly, and disgraced, nivzim, ushfalim, in front of all the other nations because as a punishment for not keeping the Torah. So the Gemara quotes the statement of Rav Yehuda that there's a certain blessing in disguise, that the fact that we are disgraced and lowly in the eyes of the nations of the world, that they don't appoint us to be the tax collectors by the rivers, and this is a Tosfos Divrei Maskil and not Gzirifti. So what is a Gzirifti? So both Rashi and Tosfos translate as Perish Sard Yotin. And Tosfos adds, which we don't have in the Rashi, Vishotrei Ha'am B'Makel. So from Tosfos it seems clear that sarjot is one thing and shoter is another thing. Rashi just uses the term sarjot. So for Rashi, and I've seen those translated this way, that it could be that sarjot is the equivalent of a shoter, meaning a sarjot means a policeman. For Tosfos, who says that Xerifti includes both, so obviously they're two different things, so perhaps we can suggest a little research on this. It could be that Midrashim used it to mean, and it's also you have it in the Jastra dictionary, that a sarjot is some kind of officer. So the first translation of Xerifti that Tosfos writes, sarjot, might mean a military officer of some kind. And Shotri Amemakel is a police officer, literally those who beat the people with sticks. Sounds like from Midrashim I've seen that a sarjot is a low-level officer as opposed to other Roman terms that are used or Greek terms that are used for higher-level officers. Tosdi v'maschil v'nataros neshiko sone. The Gemara records the statement of Shmuel bar Nachmani in the name of Rabbi Yonasan, quoting the pasuk in Mishlei that fully reads as follows. Tosfos is going to elaborate on this extensively. Ne'monim pitzei ohev v'nataros nishiko sonei. So the literal translation, trustworthy or everlasting are the wounds inflicted by a friend, someone who loves someone, v'nataros, and that we'll leave untranslated because Tosfos is going to give various translations to this, nishikot sonei, that the kisses of an enemy are natarot. In the context of the Gemara, we have Shmuel Nachmani saying in the name of his Rebbe Bionison that the wounds inflicted by someone who loves us are better, and nemanim, that they are good, and the kisses that an enemy tries to give to us are nataros, somehow bad. The language of Rav Shmuel Nachmani, Tova klala shakilel achia shiloni es Yisrael yosemi brocha shebergon bilam arasha, that the curse that the famous prophet Achia Shiloni, he was the one who was Moshech, who anointed Yeravim ben Nevat as the alternate king over Malchus Yisrael when the kingdom was split from Rechavim. So even that which he seemingly cursed Klal Yisrael about, it was a bracha in disguise, which the Gemara is going to elaborate on more, and we'll talk about in the next doses as well. So his, so to speak, wounds that he was trying to inflict on Klal Yisrael were really brachos in disguise. So hence, they're nemanim, they are trustworthy and something to rely on, and something to serve as a source of blessing. By contrast, Bilam HaRasha, who famously blessed the Jews, so he gave us, so to speak, neshikos, but he was an enemy, and therefore natarot, they were bad. They were really, to some extent, curses in disguise. So the Gemara does not directly translate the word natarot, but certainly indicates that it's bad. So an introduction to this Tosfos, just to briefly summarize Rashi's two interpretations of this Gemara. First interpretation is nataros in the language of turning over, or meaning the opposite. Rashi quotes such a meaning from a Gemara in Sukkot, Daf Yud Aleph and Aleph, where concerning Yitzchak and Rivka's prayers for children, so there it says, Vayeter Yitzchak l'Hashem l'nochach ishto v'yoser lo Hashem. So what's the language of v'yoser? The Gemara there in Sukkot says that It's derived from the word atar. Atar is some kind of pitchfork, as Rashi says in Laz, forka. So just like a pitchfork turns over the crops, so too the tzaddikim are able to turn over the gzeira ra to a gzeira tova. So how does that spell itself out here? Anatarot, what's being turned over? So presumably Rashi means one of two meanings. Either, as we'll see more in the Tosis, but either that it's the opposite of being nemanim, it's not something you could rely on because it's really a klal in disguise, or hafuch in the sense that what seems to be an act of affection, a neshika, a kiss, is really the opposite. It's really an act of trying to be destructive. Then Rashi has another pshat, that natarot is a language of increase, as he writes also in Laz, increase. Lashon riboy v'yitur. And in that context, quotes a pasuk in Yecheskel, hatartem alai devrechem, that they're too much in the sense that they're a burden. The shorish ayin tav resh itself means increase, but in this context, it means they're so much that they're burdensome. For a full phrase from Mishle, as applied to Bilma Rasha, would be nataros nishiko sone, that the kisses of the enemy are so much that they are burdensome in the sense that they are unwelcome because they're really not signs of love. The Tosis, in a similar way, presents both interpretations. But I'd like to, as we go through this Tosis, be precise in the reading here, that it could be that the interpretations that Tosis are giving, at least some of the lines here, are not trying to interpret our Gemara, but rather in trying to interpret Pshuto Shel Mikra. To map out the Tosis, Tosis is going to briefly explain our Gemara, and then that's going to be followed by three interpretations of the pasuk that we're dealing with. And as we shall see, according to my humble suggestion, those are three additional interpretations besides the drash interpretation of our Gemara, three pshat interpretations. And according to another approach, the three additional interpretations, the first one is actually going to be explaining our Gemara, and the other two are going to be different interpretations based on pshat. So we begin. Menataros neshiko sone, pirish, the Bach takes out the word kolomar, because he didn't say anything yet. Pirish, nemanim pitzei ohev, v'chilufeyen besone. Menataros loshen hipuch. Menataros loshen hipuch basar, for kabalaz, shemahapchen boas atvua. This is pretty much a direct quote from Rashi. It doesn't elaborate on nemanim pitzei ohev, we'll just retranslate that the wounds inflicted by a friend are trustworthy, you can rely on them. And here, we gave two pirushim in the Rashi as to what he meant by the word hafach. So Tosfos makes it explicit, v'chilufeyen besone, that the wounds inflicted by the ohev, the pitzei ohev, are nemanim. And the opposite is true for the one who hates us, meaning even the neshikos of the sone are the opposite, that those are unreliable and those are horrible. And Tos elaborates, as does Rashi, v'nataros loshen hipach batar. That how are we getting the idea of that it's the opposite of nemanim? From the word atar, which is the pitchfork, as Tos quotes, fork of laz, which is used to turn over the tefuah. So that is exactly identical to Rashi's first pshat in this Gemara. And now Tos writes, v'hochi pashtei dekro. And this is the simple reading of the pasuk. So I'm going to read this line in two ways. One is the way they read it in the Oz V'Hodor elucidation, and one is what I thought was more correct in the context of Tosis. The first way, the Oz V'Hodor way, is that Tosis is now further elaborating on Pshat and Argamara. V'hachi pashti dekro. And such, meaning the way Argamara interprets the Pasuk, is the simple reading of the text. And now Tosis further elaborates on both halves. Pitze ohev nemanim, right, the wounds of the friend are trustworthy, shev ose letova, because he has in mind for good things, afilu kishemaka chavero, miskaven letova, that even when he hits his friend, he has in mind for good things, for rebuke, or to stop him from doing terrible things, whatever, let's say he is about to run into the street, and smacking him to hold him back and prevent him from doing that, or some other context of punishment to prevent someone from falling into something that's terrible. And then Tosis now elaborates on the second half of the verse, Neshiko Sona Heim La'efach, that the kisses of a hater are the opposite. She'osa Kolaro, he does everything with bad intentions. Again, the word Nataros, meaning La'efach, is the opposite of Nemanim. They're not for good, they're for bad. According to that interpretation, the reason that Tosis further elaborates is because in the initial salvo, he just translated the word natarot and how that's being translated. And now he goes back for a second pass to translate the whole pasuk in the context of our Gemara. Ne'amonim pitzei ohev v'nataros nishikosone. In my humble opinion, based on the next line of Tosis, I believe that Tosis, by saying v'achi pashto dekra, is actually trying to not interpret our Gemara. He's trying to interpret the pshuto shel mikra, the simple meaning. Our Gemara is giving a drash meaning, and Tosis is presenting the simple meaning, after he presents an interpretation of our Gemara earlier in the first three lines. Tosis on the Fei Amar Aleph on the bottom of the page does something very similar, where the Gemara has a drash interpretation of a pasuk, and then Tosis gives the pshuta shel mikra. So according to that interpretation, the way it should be read is that our Gemara is interpreting pitzei ohev ne'manim, that the words of klala, of achia shiloni, were actually brachos in disguise. Not just generally speaking, that harsh rebuke or even punishment that's given by someone who cares for us is with a good intention to turn us around, longer term for the good. But our Gemara is saying that within the words of the klala themselves, a bracha is hidden. Again, specifically in the context of our Gemara, that Achia Shiloni compared klala Yisrael to a reed, and the reed, even though it can be blasted by the wind, but ultimately will recover. So within the harsh rebuke of Achia is a bracha. And the opposite with Bilam, that within the brachos he gave is a klala. That is al derech hadrash, a true interpretation, but an additional layer of meaning. But then when Tosfos says v'achi pashti dekra, he's not interpreting our Gemara. He's saying, what is this simple reading of ne'manim pitzei ohev v'nataros nishikosone? And the simple reading is, not that the pitzei ohev has within them something good directly and immediately, but that the long-term intention of those woundings and hittings is for our benefit. And the opposite with a nishikosone, that might look in the short term for the good, but ultimately it's for bad. Maybe to soften one up and to think that the sone is an ohev, and then to use that for the advantage of the sone, to take advantage of the one he had formerly kissed. As opposed to the context of Agamara, where the nishikosone themselves are evil. That's what I think is the more accurate reading of this Tosfos. Especially, this is what inspired me for this, is because the next line of Tosfos is going to give another interpretation, which he also calls Pashti Dekra, which doesn't seem to be an interpretation of our Gemara. Yesh Mefarshim Pashti Dekra Hachi. And some interpret the Pshuta Shel Mikra, the simple reading, as follows. It doesn't say Yesh Mefarshim Gemara Seinu Hachi. Some explain our Gemara this way. So some explain the Pasuk this way. Like Tosis is like now quoting commentaries on Nevi'im. Indeed, the Yesh Mefarshim we're about to read appears in the Metzudas David. Not in elucidating and elaborating on our Gemara, just what is the Pashto Pshat. So that led me to think that the first interpretation of Achi Pashto Dekra is also not elucidation of how our Gemara is interpreting it, but rather just the Pshuto Shel Mikra. So let's read the second interpretation. V'yesh Mefarshim Pashto Dekra Achi. Some interpret the simple interpretation as follows. Ne'manim pitzei ohev, as we said earlier. V'nataros n'shikosone kolomar v'nataros l'shen ribui. Nataros in the language of increase, as we saw in the second pshat in Rashi, except according to what we're saying now, Rashi was using that as a pshat in our Gemara. Now Tosis is interpreting it according to Pshuta Shel Mikra. Kolomar, nishiko sone domimem lamasa, that the kisses of the enemy are considered like a burden. Kolomar, meaning hey merubos, they are too much, ulamasa laolam, and as a burden for the world, or always considered a burden. Ultimately, for the same reason, because they are not sincere, and maybe even the opposite. So now Tosis gives a third interpretation of Pshuta Shel Mikra. According to the Ozvi Hadar, this would be the second interpretation of Pshuta Shel Mikra. The first interpretation, what he called Pashto Dekra, was an interpretation of our Gemara. According to my reading, this is the third interpretation of Pshuta Shel Mikra, and this is in a totally opposite direction. Yesh Mefarshim Achi, and some explain it as follows. Kishaoavim Osim Meriva V'sonim Zezeh. When even friends fight with each other, and that as a result of that fight, they hate each other. Hasina nemana, the hatred is very faithful. V'hachi perush nemanim pitzei ohev. This is the interpretation of faithful are the wounds inflicted by the friend. Hapitzaim zeu hasina, the wounds are metaphorical for the hatred shebein ohevim that exists between friends as a result of a fight that they got into. Heim nemanot, they are faithful, meaning everlasting. It should have been Nemanim, because it's going on Pitzaim of the Ohavim. Meaning, that even good friends, I saw in the Oz Vahara, they interpret precisely because they're good friends. So when they get into a fight, so that leads to an even greater hatred. I quote the biblical episode of Amnon and Tamar, that greater was the hatred that Amnon hated Tamar over the love that he originally felt for her. Okay, it could have been Docha the Raya, because there Amnon had lust for Tamar, not love, but maybe they're true friends that have actual love, so maybe even getting to a fight wouldn't lead to such terrible hatred. But that's what Tosis interprets as a third interpretation of the verse, that in the opposite direction, that when all of them get into a fight, even all of them, or precisely because they're all of them, so their hatred could be, chalila, very everlasting. And the opposite concerning enemies, v'nataros neshikosone, pirish, meaning, t'chishasonim osim shalom zel hazeh, when enemies make peace with each other, and that is evidenced by the neshikot, by the kisses, hashalom v'apshara shebeneim, the peace and the compromise and the reconciliation between them, amana v'kayemes. So that is trustworthy and everlasting. V'haino nataros neshikosone. And that is the meaning of the verse of the second half of the pasuk, nataros neshikosone. Kolomar, meaning neshikosone nataros, that the kisses of the enemy are nataros. Now, what Tosafot leaves vague here is that how does the word nataros come to mean amana v'kayemes, faithful and everlasting? It's clear that in the first half of the verse where it says nemanim pitzei ohev, so the word nemanim means faithful and everlasting. But how does the word nataros come to mean everlasting? So I saw again in the Oz V'Hadar, they suggest that nataros in the language of increase, similar to the second interpretation, an increase in the sense of increase of time, that it keeps lasting, keeps going and going and going and going. And in that sense, the word nataros, by extension, from its meaning of increase, could mean also amana v'kayemes. That interpretation could be true. Would have been nice if Tosa said that. So I thought to myself, I'm not in any way sure that this is correct, that Tosis in the last pshat didn't have to interpret nataros, because here the pshuto shel mikra, here the simplest interpretation of nataros, as we have from the original instantiation of that in Parshas Toldos, vayetar Yitzchak l'shem l'nochag ishto. So the pashto pshat, the simple meaning is it means that Yitzchak entreated, prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rashi and Chumash adds that it means to pray a lot. L'hatir, hatir abadi, Paro tells Moshe Rabbeinu to get rid of Hamaka, is to pray intensely. So what is vayoser lo Hashem, l'fi pshuto, that literally he was prayed to, but in the context that Hashem heard the prayer in a language of nifal, of passive, Hashem listened to the prayer. The prayer was received. So if we go with that approach, then perhaps this is what Tosa is driving at, vinataros neshikosone, that the kisses of the enemy will be received. And if the kisses of the enemy will be received, so what happens? Then peace will reign, which is exactly what Tosa says. The kishisonim osim shalom zelazeh, shalom v'apshar shebenei, and amon v'kayemes. As a result of the kisses being well received. So this last shot, again, exactly the opposite direction, that the wounds of someone who cares for us, but the wounds are done not l'shem shemayim, in order to benefit the one that they befriend, but rather the fight that they got into, that fight will last forever. But when enemies decide to appease each other and engage in the shikot, so then it's not tarot, it will be received, and therefore will be everlasting. Based on my humble understanding, after a while thinking about this tosis, I was able to suggest an interpretation of the last line, which seems rather cryptic. Tosis says, V'hainu nataros neshikosone kolomar, neshikosone nataros. What does Tosis do with this kolomar? He takes the words of the pasuk, nataros neshikosone, where the verb appears first, or the adjective, depending on whether you take my pshat or those of other pshat, and then you have the subject, neshikosone. And he says a kolomar, neshikosone nataros, where first you put the subject, the kisses of the enemy, and then you have the verb or the adjective, nataros. What does he gain by doing that? So, at first glance, it helps clarify, because especially in English, perhaps in French too, we're used to having the subject first and then the verb, then the adjective. In Hebrew, you oftentimes have the opposite, Vayidab Hashem Moshe Lamor, and spoke Hashem to Moshe. But if that's true, why did Tosis have this kolomar only in the third interpretation? He could have had this kolomar in all the interpretations, whether the first pshat, that nataros means hafuch, or whether the second pshat, that nataros means increase, or whether the third pshat, that nataros either means increase or was received. In all of them, you could switch the sentence order to make it more recognizable in other languages. So why did he save the kolomer to the end? So I wanted to humbly suggest that according to the first two interpretations, nataros is an adjective. Either nataros in the sense that it's opposite, first interpretation, or nataros in the sense that it's too much, second interpretation. The common denominator is an adjective. And especially in poetry, the poetic writings of the Nevi'im, so a lot of times the adjective appears first. Nemanim, pitzei ohev. Nemanim is an adjective, trustworthy or everlasting. Pitzei ohev. So too, the adjective, nataros, nishikosoni. So there, Tos doesn't have to say a kolomar, because it's quite evident as to what it means. But if I'm correct, that nataros, in the third interpretation, is actually a passive verb. Nataros nishikosone. It means, are received, are the kisses of the enemy. They are well received by the other enemy. So that, in many languages, is a little bit of a backward sentence. Nataros nishikosone. Are received are the kisses of the one who hates. That's like in the art scroll, intralinear sitter. They always, or Tehillim, they always have to give those awkward translations when they're trying to translate each word on the fly, on between the lines. So that's what Tosa says, Kilomar, Nataros, Nishikosone, Kilomar, Nishikosone, Nataros. Meaning, the kisses of the enemy are well received by the other enemy, and therefore they will become friends again in an everlasting way. As opposed to the literal, more awkward translation of, are well received the kisses of the enemy. Which, as we mentioned, in other languages would be somewhat awkward. And all the more so, perhaps, because nataros is a present tense. And in a present tense, I saw they write this, that even in Hebrew, it's more the norm to have the subject first, because in the present tense, each form of the present tense could take three different subjects. Like shomer could be ani atahu. So nataros could either be anachnu, aten, or hein in the feminine. So there, it's all the more usual, even in Hebrew, to have the subject first. So that's why Tosa says kolomar. As opposed to in the avar and the atid, the past and the future, where due to the grammar of things, the verb itself contains the subject, so there it's quite usual in the language of Tanakh to have the verb first, so that might be an additional reason, specifically because here it's a hove, why it's unusual, even within the language of Tanakh, to have the subject second, assuming nataros is a present tense verb. According to that interpretation that I'm suggesting, amana v'kayemes is not the translation of nataros, but rather that which emerges from the fact that it's nataros, that it was received, and therefore it lasts forever. Exactly opposite, unfortunately, of the nemanim pitzei ohev, where the fight that the friends get into also lasts forever. A quick summary of the Tosfos. The first two interpretations, or perhaps the first three interpretations, depending on how we explained it earlier, are all going with the approach that nemanim pitzei ohev is that the pitzei ohev are good, and nataros nishikosone, that they are bad. And the interpretations differ as follows, that the first interpretation, or perhaps the first two interpretations, are going with the approach that nataros means the opposite, that it's the opposite of nemonim, according to the second or third interpretation, depending on which numbering system you take. Nataros means that they're too many, they're unwelcome as a result, they're a burden. And according to the last interpretation, exactly the opposite way, nataros nishikosone is referring to the fact that they are everlasting, either nataros in the sense of increase in time, or that the kisses are well received, and therefore lead to peace. And according to that last interpretation, nemanim pitzei ohev is in a bad way, that when all of them get into a fight, that could be everlasting. The Gemara had recorded that in Bilam's brachos were contained hidden klalos, that unlike Achia Shaloni, that compared Klal Yisrael to a kone, a reed grows in a watery area, and although it is subject to being blown around by winds a lot, but the winds will never uproot it. So once the winds stop, the reed is able to become upright again and survive. An erez, some kind of high cedar tree, taking out the words alimayim in the Gemara, which the margin points out doesn't really belong here, as we shall see based on the Tosfos, that an erez does not grow near water, and it does not have a trunk that is able to replace itself, and it doesn't have a lot of roots. So then winds don't generally blow it down because it's a strong tree, but when you have some kind of heavy wind, it will blow it down, and then it has no chance of regrowing and surviving. So that's the hidden klala that Bilam Chalila was wishing for Klal Yisrael to eventually be destroyed by some kind of poronos or punishment for averus that will hit them. So the context of the Gemara is clear that the Gemara is contrasting the kone that grows near water and cedars arazim that do not. So both Rashi and Tosfos interpret similarly as follows: Ma erezeh perish, meaning the avagav tefsiv bebekra alemayim. That even though it says in the pasuk in the brachos of Bilam, ka'arazim alemayim, again, the full pasuk is important to state all this because Tosfos is going to quote different parts of it. Kinchalim nitoyu, kiganos alenahar, ka'ahalim nata Hashem, ka'arazim alemayim. Like streams which are noteh, nun vav teshei. Rashi and Chumash explains the word nitoyu as elongated and that it reaches long distances. Like gardens that are on the river, like some kind of aromatic growth that Hashem planted. And finally, ka'arazim alemayim, like cedars on the water. So Tosfos is implicitly asking, how does the Gemara contrast kone, which grows on water, with arazim that does not grow on water, when the pasuk itself says, ka'arazim alemayim? So that's what Tosfos is now explaining. Pirish, the avagav tefsiv bebekra alemayim, even though the pasuk itself does say that it grows on the water. So the reason the Gemara says that Erez does not grow on water and that Bilam was wishing evil to Klal Yisrael, because Ahu lav Bilam ka'amrle. Those words of Alemayim was not Bilam who said it, Ela Malach. Those are the words of the Malach, as the famous Rashi quotes in the Midrashim, that Hashem forced Bilam to say certain things, and that, according to the way Tosfos is saying, that some of the words he said were not really said by Bilam at all. They were said by some kind of angel through Bilam's mouth. So the Erez that Bilam said was wishing Chalila that the Jews should not grow on water and they should not have survival. But the Malach added, no, Alemayim, in order to make it a true bracha. V'chein kulu, and so too concerning the other phrases in this verse, and presumably in the other psukim as well, Bilam Omar Kinchalim, they should be as streams, without the word Nitoyu, meaning not streams that will reach long distances, but streams that presumably will evaporate. Umalach Omar Nitoyu, that are firmly entrenched in the ground, that will reach long distances, and that will always flow. The Einam is the option that will not dry out. V'chein, and here on the margin, in the Oz V'Hara, they add in the word kiganos, because that's what Tosfos are commenting on. V'chein kiganos, like gardens, Bilam omitted Alenahar on a river. So they should be like gardens that will dry out, Chalila, eventually, and the Malach added on Alenahar, Dafka on a river, so therefore they should be everlasting. So in each phrase, in this pasuk, Bilam only had the first phrase and the Malach added in the other. With Kinechalim, the Malach added on the word Nitoyu. For the Kiganos, the Malach added in Alei Nahar. And Ka'arazim, the Malach added in Alei Mayim. Perhaps the same will be true for the fourth Keta, for the fourth phrase in that pasuk, Ka'ahalim. And then the Malach added in Nata Hashem. Tosfos, for some reason, does not comment on that. Rashi says, as we mentioned, very similarly, except he only comments on two out of the three, on the Arazim and on the Nechalim, and not on the Ganos. The Sechta Tainis of Chofim Abeis, Taistri Maschil, Nizdamelai Adam Echot, Shehu Machur B'Yoyser. The Gemara records a story of Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon. Some have a girsa of Rabbi Shimon Elazar, that he went to learn Torah, and he knew a lot, and he was feeling good about himself, and he saw a very ugly man, and the ugly man greeted him, Shalom Lecha Rabbi, and he didn't respond to the greeting. On the opposite, he insulted the ugly man and said, Reka, empty one, how ugly this person is. Are all the members of your city as ugly as you are? And that led to a whole rebuke that the ugly man told him that I don't forgive you for this, and go tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu who made me, and complain that he made me ugly. And then he appeased him, and he refused to be appeased. And finally, the townspeople convinced him to forgive him if he would never repeat such actions again. So it's a lesson in humility and being nice to everybody. So Tosfos comments on this story that Masechta Derech Eretz, Mefarish, and one of the smaller Masechtas printed in the back of Masechta Avodah Zarah. So it explains the Oso Adam Hainer Eleo, that ugly man was no ordinary, regular human being. It was actually Eleo Navi in disguise. And he had a mind for the good, Kadesh lo yagel bedover, that he shouldn't be accustomed to speaking improperly to people. Similar to the previous Amud, most interpretations of Nemonim Pitzei Ohev, that Eliyahu Navi was a friend of this Tana, and he wanted to set up the situation in order to test him and to see if he would act properly, and if he wouldn't act properly, to rebuke him, that he wouldn't do that again. They point out in the margin, and the standard Gemaras, that we don't have this in our Masechta Derech Eretz, so apparently Tosis had a somewhat different version of Masechta Derech Eretz. The Gemara elaborates on the Mishnah that from a polis, when walls fall, so that city is Misana Masras, with high level fasting, and all the cities surrounding it have something lower. According to the Tanakhama, just fasting, and according to Rabbi Kiva, just shofar blowing or calling out in tefillah. So the Gemara quotes an explanatory brisa that mapolis of the Mishnah is brios velo ruos she'enan ruyas lipo velo haruyos lipo. So we have to have a solid wall and not a shaky wall that falls in order to necessitate fasting as a result. And it has to be something that was not in danger of falling. She'enan ruyas lipo, and not something that was in danger of falling. So the Gemara asks that aren't these two things identical? A wall that's bari, that is solid, is not ruyos lipo, it's not in danger of falling. And a wall that's ru'ua, that is shaky, is ruyos lipo, that is in danger of falling. So what is the distinction between those? So apparently we have to create cases where you have a wall that's bari, and yet is ru'uya lipo, that it is in danger of falling. And you could have a wall that's ru'a, that's shaky, and yet is ena ru'ya lipo, and is not a danger of falling. And in order to necessitate fasting, it has to be that there were two positive qualities and still it fell. The way the Rishonim explained that it's certainly a sign in Hashemayim, that something unusual is happening, and therefore it's not just teva ha'olam, which would not necessitate fasting. That's an interesting thing to look into as to when natural disasters necessitate extra tefillahs and fasting, and when they do not. So this Gemara implies that at least for fasting, it has to be something unusual beyond the regular courses of events in nature. So in our Girsa, we have as an example of the former split, meaning where a wall could be bari, and yet it could be ru'ya lipo, meaning that it's in danger of falling, that we're talking about a high wall. It's a very high wall, so even though the foundations are strong, but still, as the expression goes, the higher they are, the harder they fall. So, to paraphrase it, the higher they are, the more in danger they are of falling. But even though it's a strong wall, but it's in danger of falling. So on that, that's the Dimaskoptosis. So Tzricha Denafli Machmas Guvhayu, that if they fall as a result of their height, so that's an example of a wall that's bari, but fell anyway, because it's Ruyalipo. So Tosis explains, Pirish, meaning, to have a brios, that they're solid walls, veloha yuru yosli pol, elo machmas govan. They were not fit to fall except for their height. Or to paraphrase that, they were only fit to fall as a result of their height. So in that kind of case, in the context of the Gemara, one wouldn't fast because there was an external reason why it fell, namely its height. And that's an additional chiddush to the more basic case of a wall that's ra'ua, that is shaky from the get-go, and as a result of that, it's ru'ya lipo, it's fit to fall. So in that case, it's very straightforward that you don't fast, because there the wall is destined to fall from two different perspectives. It's weak to start out with, and as a result of that, it's likely to fall. Here, in the case that Tosis outlines from the Gemara, there's a great chiddush that you don't have to fast, that even though it's a bari, even though it's a strong wall, but since its height made it ru'ya lipol, even though it's only ru'ya lipol, it's only fit to fall because of its height and not because of its weakness to start out with, nonetheless, there's still some extraneous reason that caused it to fall, and therefore, there is no need to fast. As opposed to a case that would necessitate fasting, which would be a strong wall, a bari wall, which is not so high, and therefore, it wasn't ru'ya lipol at all, and still fell, where there are two positive factors indicating that it shouldn't fall, so then already something outside of the regular order of nature and therefore necessitates fasting. It's notable that although the Ran on the Rif as well as the Beis Yosef all quote This version of the Gemara that Tosfos is commenting on, that high walls that are firm and not shaky, but nonetheless, that they are considered ru'uyos lipol, and therefore, if they fall, they do not warrant decreeing a fast day. But Rashi, who has an elaborate Hachigar Sinan here, seemed to only have the second example of walls which are brios, but nonetheless ru'uyos lipol, namely walls that are on the river edge, and as a result of the waters of the river, they might ruin the foundation and cause them to fall. But Rashi seems to omit the concept of high walls. And the same is true for the Rosh, and the same is true for the Rambam, and the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch. Be interesting to explore if there's a fundamental debate here that those Rishonim hold that high walls that fall, that are otherwise firm, would necessitate fasting, or they just didn't have that gears in the Gemara. But they would agree to Tosis and the Ran that walls that fall that are very high do not necessitate fasting. Tzarachim. Taizdiv Maschil, Amrlei, the Ikar of Ada Vahadan, the Nafish Zechusei. The Gemara, in the context of discussing weak walls, discusses a case that in the Hardah there was a Ra'uah wall, a very shaky wall, that people would be careful, including the great Amaroyim Rav Shmuel, not to pass under it because they were afraid it would fall, but it lasted for many years, for 13 years. But they still wouldn't pass under it because they would be afraid that it would fall at any moment. Parenthetically, some of the Farshim explain that this is a counterexample of the second split of a wall that's weak, but it's not Ruyali Pol because it lasted for 13 years. So obviously it doesn't seem to be too fit to fall, even though it's Ri'ua. And again, if such a wall would fall, that would be insufficient reason to fast, because it was ru'a, it was shaky, even though it didn't fall for a long time. Again, the only time you would fast would be where you have the total fluke of a strong wall that wasn't fit to fall, that fell anyway. So the Gemara records that Rav Shmuel wouldn't pass under it, and one day they were visited by Rav Ada Bar Ava. So Shmuel said, as usual, let's go around this wall over here so we shouldn't be in danger. So Rav said, no, today Rav Ada Bar Ava, before Shmuel explained, Rav Ada Bar Ava was a Talmud of Rav, and he is a big tzaddik, Rav was telling Shmuel, and he has a lot of zechuyah, so you don't have to worry. And the Gemara quotes a follow-up story to Rav Huna, that he used this sitkus of Rav Ada Bar Ava to actually save his wine barrels that was in a shaky area, so he brought Rav Ada Bar Ava in and spoke to him, and then all of his workers took out the wine barrels, and then when they left, the whole thing collapsed. So Rav Ada Bar Ava was not too happy about his being used in that way. Okay, so Tosis just has a technical comment as to when exactly Rav Ada Bar Ava lived. Again, the Divrei Maschil, Amalei, the Ikar Rav Ada Ba'adan, the Nafash Chusei, Rav Ada is with us, who has many merits. So Tosis comment, V'tzarech Lomar, you have to say, the Trei Rav Ada Havu, that there were two Rav Adas, the Rav Ada Bar Ava Hava Bimei Rava. We find that Rav Ada Bar Ava was in the days of Rava. How so? How do we know that? The Matzina B'chama Komos. We find in several places, Amar Rav Ada Bar Ava, Amar Rava. The Rav Ada Bar Ava is quoting his Rebbe Rava. They point out in the Ois Vada Gemaris that among those places are Psachim Yudala Mer Aleph, as well as in Ar Masechta on the Avchesa Mer Aleph. The Gemara records that Rav Ada Bar Ava would review his studies 24 times, Keminyan, according to the number of the Sifrei Tanakh, and then he would enter into the room of Rava to learn from him. So it sounds like Rav Ada Bar Ava was a student of Rava. Now, just to gain sight here, that Rava was much, much later than Rav and Shmuel. So Tosis elaborates, Rav Ada Bar Ava, the Hocha, but the Rav Ada Bar Ava of this Gemara, of here, literally, Mashma da Hava Chover la Rav and Shmuel. Sounds like he was a friend, a colleague of Rav and Shmuel. Again, some of the Mephoshim I saw in the Sefer that collects all the Tanaim and the Amaroyim, that maybe it was more of a Talmud, because he quotes the statements of Rav and Shmuel, but here Tosis assumes he was a colleague, maybe because of the great respect that Rav and Shmuel accorded him. And how do we see he's a friend of their time period? Since Shmuel commented to Rav, again, that comment Tosis skips, but the comment was, let's pass around this shaky wall. V'kamalei, and Rav responded, Ha'ika Rav Ada Ba'adan. Rav Ada is here with us. So clearly, he was a chaver. He lived in their time period. Again, maybe a Talmud, Tosis is a chaver, but he lived then. So now, Tosis is just going to quickly prove that it's quite obvious that Rav Ada Bar Ava was a Talmud of Rava, then the math is not going to work out here in terms of chronology. Vanan Yadana, and we know that Rav Yehuda hoya Talmud of Rav Shmuel, that Rav Yehuda was a student of Rav Shmuel, oftentimes quoting them, Rav Yehuda Marav, Rav Yehuda Shmuel. The Rava have a nolad biyom shemeis Rav Yehuda. And Rava, as Tos is quoting a Gemara in Kiddushin, Tafayin Beis Mabeis, Rava was born on the day that Rav Yehuda died. That Gemara is quoting the pasuk in Koheles, Zorach Hashemesh, Shavua Hashemesh, Ad Shavua Shemshil Shalzeh, Zorach Shemshil Acher. That Hashem arranges there should always be great Torah leaders. And oftentimes on the day that one Torah leader dies, another Torah leader is born, continuing the Mesorah. So one of the examples of that is that Rava was born on the day that Rav Yehuda died. Rav Ada, Ketosis continue, Hoya Talmud Rava, as he mentioned earlier from the other Gemaras. Rav Ada was a student of Rava. So putting it all together, we have a student of Rav and Shmuel, namely Rav Yehuda. On the day that he died, Rava was born. And Rava grew up to eventually be the Rebbe of Rav Ada Barava. So Rav Ada Barava was even younger than Rava. So that would mean that he was born after Rava. So putting it all together, Rav Ada Barava clearly could not have been around in the days of Rav and Shmuel. So, but our Gemara says he was. So that's what Tos conclude. Im kein, if so, al korchach tzarich lomar. Perforce, we have to say, the trei Rav Ada Avu, that there were two Rav Adas. Again, Tosis is quoting Rav Ada Barava multiple times, so meaning not just that there were two Rav Adas, there were two Rav Ada Baravas. So I just took a look at some of the other Gemaras that are being quoted by Tosis here. So the Gemara in Kiddushin, the Fayim Beis and Beis, so there, both Rashi and Tosis refer to a Gemara in Bava Basra, the Chof Beis and Aleph, which talks about the unfortunate demise of Rav Ada Bar Ahava, and the girsa that we have there, that Tosis and Bava Basra actually notes from Beinu Hanano explicitly, is not Rav Ada Bar Ahava, but Rav Ada Bar Abba. To clarify, not Ahava, like we have in our Gemara, as in love, Aleph Hey, Vet Hey, but Abba, as in father, Aleph Bet Aleph. In our Gemara, it's Rav Ada Bar Ahava, and the Gemara Bava Basra, according to Tosis there, according to Beinu Hananel, it's Rav Ada Bar Abba. So that would further verify this approach that Tosis takes, that the two Rav Adas. Tosis sounds like that the two Rav Ada Bar Ahavas. But according to that Girsa, there are actually two Rav Adas. One's Rav Ada Bar Ahava. He was the earlier one, the colleague, or perhaps the student of Rav and Shmuel. And Rav Ada Bar Abba, who was the later one, who was the student of Rav. I also saw that Rashi over there in Masechta Kiddushin, Daf Ayin Beis and Beis, has a different interpretation that it's all the same Rav Ada Bar Ahava, but he lived a very, very long life. The Gemara has cases like that of Amoraim who lived for hundreds of years. So that would be a different approach to resolve this idea that Rav Ada Bar Ahava was both connected to Rav and Shmuel and also connected to Rav. To review the context of the Gemara, since it had mentioned Rav Ada Bar Ahava, records that the students of Rav Ada Bar Ahava asked him, "Bamei arachta yomim? How are you zochah to live a long life?" According to the pshat that we quoted from Rashi in Masechta Kiddushin, he lived a very, 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 very long life. According to the other interpretations, he lived a regular long life, but he wasn't around all the way from the days of Rav and Shmuel to the days of Rava, but he lived a long life. So they asked him for various things that he did that he thought in their merit that he lived a very long life. So one of them was, they didn't refer to people by some kind of nicknames. So the Gemara says, one version is the Lo Karasi Lachaveri Bahachi Noso, and a different version, Va'amila Bachani Choso. So Rashi interprets Achinoso that a name that other people give to the person. Kegon Shem Levi. Shem Levi is like some kind of nickname, some kind of attachment, I guess, to the original name. So like in a bad way, Ivan the Terrible, or in a good way, Moshe the Brain, or Moshe the Ilui. That's Hachinoso. And Chanichoso, Rashi interprets as Kemo Chanichos Ovos, some kind of what we would call a surname, a family name. In the past, they didn't quite have family names, but sometimes they had the equivalent of a family name, as we'll see in Tosis, like Ibn Ezra. So Tosis, similar to Rashi, interprets Hachinoso as some kind of kinoi, some kind of nickname for the person himself, and Chanichoso as relevant to the family. Similar to Rashi. But Tosis is an important clarification. Bachinoso, say Tosis, Pirish, Bichinui Shemachanan Oso, Bach changes it to Bnei Adam, in some kind of nickname that people attach to him. And then Tosis adds an important word, Lignai, a derogatory nickname. Bach adds in three words, Kigon Shem Levi, some kind of attachment, I guess, to the original name. Like we said, like Ivan the Terrible, in this case, Moshe the Terrible. So that's Hachinoso, similar to Rashi, but he adds in that it's derogatory. Bachani Choso, Pirish, Bach changes the word from kinoi to kinohu b'shem mishpachto. They refers to him by the name of his family, Shem Levi. Once again, a name that is attached to his primary name. Bach adds in quite a few extra words here. The yesh mishpacha shemechanen bnei adam l'chol ha-mishpacha v'korin b'chanicha Shem Levi. And there are families that the whole family is called by a certain name. Kemo Shem Chanichas Avos Begitin Aras Aradoros. Similar to the phrase of Chanichas Avos that appears in Masech Gitin, the Peches Man Aleph, that for 10 generations they could still refer to the person that way even though that name is no longer used. Taz gives a famous example, Kigon, for example, Rabbi Avram Ibn Ezra. Of course, his name was Avram and his father wasn't necessarily Ezra, but that was the family name. That the entire family were referred to by that surname of Ibn Ezra. Now, there's nothing derogatory about Ibn Ezra. The Tos continued to say, V'davka l'gnai, but in the context of our Gemara, of what Rav Adab Rav was saying that he did that caused the Richas Yomim, is where you don't use a derogatory surname. Av l'shvach mutar. But if it's for praise, I would humbly suggest perhaps if it's neutral, so then it's allowed. And that's not necessarily something that we have to be careful about. So, at first glance, it sounds like Tosis is quoting Ibn Ezra as an example of what our Gemara is talking about, and then he says, Davka Lignai, but Ibn Ezra is not Lignai. So, l'chora, you have to say that the proof of Ibn Ezra is just to point out that sometimes families have a name attached to them besides the individual name. But in the context of our Gemara, using the term Ibn Ezra or the like is certainly okay, and being careful not to use that is not necessarily going to lead to Arichas Yamin. But using a family name or something that attaches to a family, that's derogatory. Maybe someone got into a fight with a certain family, and therefore they call the family the stingy ones. And that kinoi sticks with the family for multiple generations. So that would be asur. And it's that kind of behavior that Rav Adab Rava said that his not doing that led to Arichas Yamin. So the common denominator between Tosa's interpretation of both phrases in the Gemara of Hachinoso and Chanichoso, Hachinoso going on an individual nickname and Chanichoso going on a family nickname, is that they're both derogatory. Now, presumably what motivates Tosa's to say that is that if it's totally acceptable to use a complimentary nickname, like Moshe the Brain, or Moshe the Ilui, or Ibn Ezra, a family name, so why would it be important to avoid that, such that it would lead to Arichas Yamin? So therefore, Tosus points out that we're dealing with a sinful use of a nickname, where it's derogatory, and one would violate or nos dvorim, makes them feel bad, or worse, to be mavaish somebody, to embarrass them. So therefore, it's that sinful behavior that Rav Adab Rava was saying he was careful not to do. Is that what Rashi means as well? So the version we have in Rashi, where Rashi doesn't mention the word gnai, would imply that Rashi argues on Tosus and holds that even regular nicknames or regular family names, while presumably being mutter to use, but it's a midat chasidut, it's an act of piety not to use them. And that's exactly one of the noble modes of conduct that led to Rav Adab Rava living a very long life. The Bach, though, within Rashi in letter Zion, actually adds in the word lignai. And presumably what motivated him to do so is because there's a directly parallel Gemara in Masechta Megillah on Daf Chav Ches Amar Aleph. And there, the Talmidim are asking not Rav Adab Rava, but they're actually asking Rabbi Zeira. And he gives the same list, which is presumably the basis behind the Girsan Ar Gemara, where we have Sholo Talmidim is Rabbi Zeira, Va'amri Lo Rav Adab Rava. There are actually two different versions as to which Amora they asked. So Rashi there on that Gemara Megillah says exactly like Tosus, that these names are derogatory. So in order to perhaps unify the two Rashis, the Bach changed the Girsa of our Rashi, or perhaps he had a different manuscript of Rashi, where he said, L'gnai, be that as it may, the Tosa Megillah, Achav Zayin HaMebeis, in a similar context, where the Gemara quotes that they asked Reb Zakkai, to what does he attribute his long life? And he says, because, L'chinisi Shem L'chaveri, I never used the kinoi. So Tosa there says explicitly, that if it would be a kinoi L'shem Gnai, he quotes the Gemara, Bob Metzia, that a machana shame lechaveroi ain't lechel yolam haba. He embarrasses him with using a derogatory name, so you're going to forfeit your olam haba. So what's the chiddush that Rabbi Yana didn't do an avera that would forfeit his olam haba and that led to Arichas Yamin? Of course he avoided such averas. That's not extra. So it's clear that Tosus and the Chazayin Beis is learning that not using a kinoi that leads to long life is a midas chasidus beyond the letter of the law, where you're not even using a regular kinoi. So presumably that Tosfos would interpret our Gemara, perhaps the way we have in our version of Rashi in our Gemara in Sefta Tainis, that you don't even use a regular nickname, even though it's not derogatory, but it's a minus chassidus to call somebody their proper name. That even if you have a name like Moshe De'ilu, you shouldn't call him Moshe De'ilu, you should call him Moshe. I don't know if it goes so far as to say you can't call someone Dovi or Moshe. Maybe that's just called a kitzur shem, not even a kinui. And maybe the family names too. That even though it's very common that sometimes people refer to someone as Goldstein, Haber, Goldberg, but it's a midas chassidus to use the person's given name and not their surname. So that seems to be machlokus, whether there is this kind of midas chassidus that could lead to long life, not to use complimentary nicknames or family names instead of the proper name. Rashi, the way we have it, seems to say that there's a midas chassidus not to. Taisa seems to say that our Gemara is dealing with derogatory names. By implication, it sounds like there is no midas chassidus not to use complimentary kinuyim or neutral kinuyim. And in Masechta Megillah, you have a parallel debate there as well, where Rashi on the Chav Ches Amud Aleph says, like Tosis over here says, that it's talking about derogatory names, that's asur, and that's what led to long life by not doing that. And Tosis on Chazayin Amud Beis and Megillah says, like we have in Rashi here, without the Bach's emendation, that there's a midas chassidus not to use even complimentary or neutral kinuyim. Interestingly, the Marashah on our Masechta, commenting on Tosis' basic approach, as well as the other acts that Rav Ada Bar Ava engaged in or was careful not to engage in, points out, what's the big deal if you don't sin? How can that lead to Arichas Yom Vashanim? Especially Machana Chaver B'Shem, that the Gemara says that, as Tosis notes in Masechta Megillah, could lead to four-finger Olam Hava. So he explains that the list of actions or things that he didn't do, that Rav Ada Bar Ava mentions, are things that many, many people are nichshel in. They're not careful about. And even if they're severe averis that lead to four-finger Olam Hava, but they're not careful about. Many people call people by derogatory nicknames. So as Rav Ada Bar Ava says, that those things, I guess similar to the Rashi and Chumash, Parshas Ekev, She'adam Dosh Bakevav, people are not careful about. I am careful about. And that led to Arichas Yamim. So that's the way the Mashah defends this approach. The Mashah and the Masechta Megillah gives the other approach based on the Tosfos of Zayin and Beis, that to avoid Averis, that's not necessarily going to lead to Arichas Yamim Vashanim excessively, but to go beyond the letter of the law, Midas Chassidus, not even to use regular Kinuim, so that would lead to Arichas Yamim. It's based on those two approaches, so the whole list of things that are listed here by Rav Ada Bar Ava, one approach would be to say that Rav Ada Bar Ava was basically avoiding Avera, but it was avoiding Avera that many people were nichshel in, they were stumbled in. That's the approach Mashah takes here. And the approach that Mashah takes in Masechta Megillah is that they were all midas chassidus, they're beyond the letter of the law. So you have the parallel here between those two approaches, between the various Rishonim, Rashi, Tosis here, and Masechta Megillah.